The Fretboard Journal podcast is brought to you by a handful of brands that love what we are up to that I want to connect you with. Retrofret Vintage Guitars is our first sponsor over in New York City, one of the great vintage instrument stores around. We're talking a little bit about offsets today with Mike Adams, so I should tell you all that they have a 61 Sunburst Fender Jazzmaster that looks absolutely gorgeous on their new arrivals page right now. Go to retrofret.com. We're also brought to you by our friends at Deering Banjos, one of the great American instrument companies. Go to DeeringBanjos.com to see their entire lineup. I'm a big fan of the 10 Brooks model. They've also got great tutorials and videos for all of you out there who might be banjo curious. Our friends at Peghead Nation, one of the great instruction portals around, are offering all Fretboard Journal podcast listeners their first month free or $20 off of any annual subscription. All you got to do is use the promo code FRETBOARD. You can get 10% off of your Isotope order by using the discount code FRET10. And you can get 10% off of StringJoy strings by going to stringjoy.com and using the coupon code FRETBOARD. Thanks to everybody for tuning in and to all the brands supporting what we are up to. And now with all of that out of the way, we're going to be reviewing the news of April and early May 2023 with Mike Adams. This is our new monthly installment where he and I talk about things we've seen in the industry, life updates, you name it. It's a lot of fun. It's also very candid and open, as you're about to hear. I hope you enjoy it.
Mike Adams, you're back.
Jason Verlinde, I'm back.
How are you doing?
Yeah. Oh, boy, what a loaded question. What a good time. I am all sorts. Been through the ringer.
Yeah.
Come back stronger. Been through the fires of hell. Yeah. A little singed around the edges, you know, all that stuff. I have just recently gotten back from my hometown of York, PA, dealing with the death of my father, and we're starting on a high note this podcast.
It's okay.
Should we maybe pivot and you know, have a little dip and then a rise? You know,
well, no, because. The concept of this show or this like monthly installment is sort of a recap of guitar news with you. And we did this once and then life took over, and it's okay to talk about life.
Life took over.
Life is much more important than guitar life sometimes.
Maybe all the time.
Yeah.
Guitars are wonderful.
Yeah.
So my dad had been sick for 10 months with, stage 4 cancer of the liver, which was everywhere but his liver.
Okay.
And unfortunately, he passed on March 29th while we were in the air going home. Which was hard, but also I gotta admit, like, maybe that's okay, because the last few weeks for him were dementia and hallucinations and screaming, and I don't know if I would have been able to handle that personally. That would have been really hard. And so I'm, you know, sad I didn't get to say goodbye, but sure. I did fly out in February and get to spend a lot of time with him. And so I feel like we closed the book pretty well there. And who knows if he would have been aware of me anyway at the end.
Yeah.
So I you know, I'm just happy he's not suffering anymore, because it was brutal. And my mom went through so much. I really wish I could have been there more, but we live in Seattle, they're in Pennsylvania. Just one of those things where it just couldn't work out. We were back in Pennsylvania dealing with all of that, funeral arrangements, signing life insurance papers, figuring out what to do with the mountain of stuff that he never threw away. My dad was a banker and worked in telecommunications, and so he had spools and spools of coax and Cat 4 and Cat 5 wire, just spools after spools, hundreds of pounds of the stuff in the basement, as well as his, you know, he fancied himself a bit of a woodworker. So it was a basement full of bandsaws and routing tables and drill presses and all of this stuff that we had to carry upstairs, which was not fun. But we did that over the course of 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Put it on some shelves, and this weekend my mom will be selling all of it. Pardon me, at a yard sale.
Okay.
So hopefully all of it goes. And we had to work really hard to convince her to actually charge money for it because she just wanted to get rid of it. But she should have something for all of that. So yeah, it was dealing with that, dealing with you know, the mountains stuff that we had to sell or we had to get rid of. A couple trips to the local dump, recycling centers. We recycled so much wire, 200 pounds of wire. They don't take coax. Nobody uses it, I guess. So yeah, but we did a lot. And then since then, I've just been kind of wrestling with the specter of my father and what the legacy is that he's left behind for me and, you know, our relationship, which, you know, wasn't great. It wasn't a Disney sort of relationship. It was complex and tough and something that I will be thinking about for a long, long time. But suffice it to say, I'm glad he's not suffering. I loved my dad, and you know, it's a lot. God, it's a lot. You know, I feel like people don't talk enough about dealing with death, not the thing itself, but everything that comes after.
Yeah.
Having to go with my mom to her financial planner and help explain like what everyone's saying, because she's not a numbers person. I'm not a numbers person. just a huge undertaking. All of it was. And, yeah. My wife got to go back with me. She was helping with all of that stuff. She was instrumental. And then I played the weirdest gig of my life, actually. There's a guitar news for you.
Okay.
My dad, who rarely had anything kind to say about me and music, wanted me to play at his funeral, which was such a weird request that came out of nowhere. And the thing he wanted me to play was maybe the last thing I remember him saying, "Oh, you sound good." He really wanted me to play Ghost Riders in the Sky at his funeral.
Wow.
Total surprise. But I was able to put together a band.
I saw that you posted on social media needing,
did you need a drummer? A drummer and a bass player.
Yeah.
And my cousin Jimmy, who's an amazing guy, builds once in a while, a brilliant musician. He picked up the bass for me, and then I met a new friend named Matt, who's a drummer in Pennsylvania, who came fully prepared. I sent him Ghost Riders, the Neil LaVang version, which is my favorite version of all, Jazzmaster and flat wound strings. It's perfect. We made a medley out of that and a song called Rel Sun Aloha by the surf band Slacktone, which was written for the famous Hawaiian surfer who also passed away of cancer in, I think, 98, written as a tribute to her. And so that's a song for me, and it felt like something I could grab onto. And so I played a little bit of that into Ghost Riders in the Sky, and then I did an instrumental version of it as well with my soul, since we were in a church and felt like that would be nice for everybody. I gotta tell you, I think I'm the only person to play surf music in that church ever, that like few hundred year old church. I think I'm the first person to do it. It was a weird gig. I
can only imagine.
It was so weird. It felt like I was having this musical conversation with his casket the whole time I was facing him. It was my jazz master. I bought my first set of flats ever. I had installed so many sets over the years, but never had a set of flats for myself. So I strung up my old jazz master with 11 to 50 D'Addario's, and which was great because I really wanted to nail the sound. The thing that, because everything was so sensitive and so touchy for me at that time, the thing that helped me the most was like, all of a sudden I had this like project to work on, and I had a sound that I wanted to nail. So I
something you could control.
Something I could control. Yeah. Exactly. So I installed flats. Didn't have to do much setup work. Intonated the guitar a little bit differently. My friend Josh at Strange Audio Electronics, He builds some of my favorite small amps in the world, and he's in Pennsylvania. And I reached out and was like, do you have anything I could borrow? And it turns out he had a new Lux Plus that he had just buttoned up, and it was in a blackout finish, which is funeral appropriate.
Oh, God.
His other finishes were very loud. I have one. I love it. It's one of my favorite amps ever. So I got to borrow that. I brought my Line 6 HX Stomp for a little bit of spring reverb and some harmonic vibrato for Ghost Riders. And yeah, it was, I want to say, darkly comedic. Like, maybe this is too personal for the podcast, but the last time I played at that church was when I was like 13 or 14. And I remember standing in the same spot and hitting one chord. I hit one chord, and my dad walked up to me and he said, "You sound terrible." And he walked away. And so, like, my God, the emotional component of standing in that same spot all these years later. There he is. Yeah. There everybody else is. But also, like, I sounded great. Like, yeah. I know, shadow of a doubt, beyond it, I know that I sounded really good. I played my heart out. And I had this very weird experience where I was having this conversation, and there were so many complex emotions as I got into Ghost Riders in the Sky. I stopped feeling mournful, and I started like feeling like a little bit combative. Like, is this good enough now? Like, it was this weird thing where I got hot. I got heated while I was playing Ghost Riders, and I played my heart out. And then by the time I got to It As Well, all that faded, and I was like, I'm good now. It was this very strange performance for me. And not just a performance, very much an emotional, like, through line for me. Like, I had these three songs that meant something to me. And yeah, it was a roller coaster of emotion, but I feel like I got through it. And at the end, I was like, yeah, I'm good. And that was probably the most I felt the whole time I was back in Pennsylvania, because it was taking care of my mom and everything else. And then when we flew back to Seattle, I just kind of collapsed. I decompressed for weeks on end, not doing much of anything, because what the hell else can I do? Yeah, it has been a lot lately. And I don't know. I feel like music, I feel like friends, I feel like family, and having guitar projects to work in have all been the things that have kind of ushered me through this really fraught period of time. Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry, I kind of...
No, powerful stuff. Thank you for sharing. I mean, at first I was going to ask you, when you were telling this story, of like, oh, did this feel sort of like an out-of-body experience? But it sounded like it must have been the opposite, where you were feeling everything.
That's a really good point, Jason, because... No, absolutely. You know that feeling when you're playing? You're on stage, or you're in a group, or you're just jamming with friends, and something goes right, and you breathe it, you exhale it, you take it in, and there's this nonverbal thing that happens where everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, just happens.
Music's happening.
Yeah.
It is beautiful and life affirming, but it is an out of body experience for me. But this was the most in my body I have ever felt. I was so grounded.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a complete opposite experience, and something surely I will never forget. I'm sure I can't escape that whole experience being seared into my psyche. But yeah, it qualifies as the weirdest gig I've ever played, for sure.
Yeah,
and there is video of it. My cousin, unbeknownst to me, took phone footage of it. He set it up on one of the pews. And so I've watched it a bunch of times. I have no intention of sharing it, though, because it was a moment that I didn't really think about it as like a shareable moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just a thing that lives in the past for me. an experience that I will reflect on, but I don't know. It's not something I wanted to live on the internet or live in perpetuity. So yeah, finite moment, as music often is. And
there's some construction.
There's
going
some construction
in the building. The Fretboard Journal.
It sounds like there. They're dragging axes across the floor. There.
I have no idea
what's going on in that room.
I have no idea. You've had a rough year.
Yeah. 23 has not been kind to me yet. I hope, like I said last time, I hope we're getting everything bad out of the way. Mm-hmm. Much like the construction. I hope that ceases. Holy crap. Boy, 23 has had curveball after curveball after curveball. And while I don't know much about baseball, I'm just going to keep swinging until something connects.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, there's a good little analogy for you. There's a good little affirmation for the listeners.
But you are also this noise is
this noise.
You're looking for work.
I'm going to start looking for work. Okay. You heard it here first. I am going to get around to it finally.
Amidst the clatter of whatever. A lot of brands, a lot of builders listen to the Fretboard Journal podcasts. I think they tell me that. Are you looking? Would you take like part time consulting work alongside full time work?
Oh, buddy, I consult on anything.
Okay,
you got a cool guitar you want feedback on? I'm there.
Okay.
If you're working at GE and you've got a fancy new smart fridge you need some feedback on, I mean, hey. Okay. You want me to take a look at your manuscript? I'm there.
All right.
You want me to work on a spec script? Like, look, all my doors are open. I'll do anything. But yeah, I would love to consult. I would love to. I don't know. I mean, it's so hard for me to like say exactly what I want right now in the midst of all of this. But yeah, no, I'm open. I'm open for business.
Yeah.
I just got to dedicate some time to it finally.
Well, you've had a month or two here where you
had a couple things to deal with.
Yeah, a couple things to deal with. So,
yeah, but hey, listener, if you got a job, I'll do it.
All right.
Hey,
it's good to put that out into the universe, as they say.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Jason, I'm thinking about reigniting my voiceover career because I used to do that for video games and I loved it.
Yeah.
So let this podcast be my demo reel. If you're enjoying the dulcet tones from deep within my diaphragm, you know who to call.
Yeah. Jason, I would offer you our studio, but as you can hear, it's rather loud.
Yeah, this is not an ideal environment. We'd have to, there's so many fucking egg crates up here. There's no way.
Soundproofed we are not right now, but we'll bring that back.
Said that kind of like Yoda.
Well, I did want you to talk about your life updates. That was first on my list here. So
I hope that was good content, Jason. You can cut it all.
I if you want me to, I can, but I can also leave it in because it's important for people.
I'll leave it. Okay. I'm an open book. I live my life loud and proud.
Okay.
Sorry,
I don't know where we, I don't know how we segue from that. We probably can't.
Well, Jason, speaking of life updates,
yes.
if it were closer to the holidays, I'd call you a little runner boy. Pa-run, pa-run, run. You, that was dumb.
That was really awkward. Yeah.
I know. You just ran a whole hell of a lot, and that's fascinating to me.
Okay, yeah. We'll have very little guitar content on this week's Fretboard Journal podcast.
Give it a couple more minutes.
I signed up for what is known, I guess, as an ultra run, although the run that I participated in didn't have to be an ultra distance. Ultra run is just anything longer than a marathon.
Yeah.
But the run that I did was a lot of little laps, and so you could leave or bow out or do whatever whenever you wanted, and that was Saturday night. It was an overnight run, which added to the spice of it. And it was in the woods, 2 hours, 90 minutes north, 90 minutes east of Seattle, Washington, where we are. And I didn't know how long I was going to last. My wife was like, what's your goal? A lot of people let these things say, what is your goal? Like, what's your goal time? What is your goal distance? And I can safely say I was probably the only person who did not have an answer to that question, because I was such a fish out of water. I just said, I'm here, you know, I'll, you know, fun wasn't in the equation. It was more just like, that's a good question. I don't know what my goal is here. I'm just here and I'm going to do it. And so I did it, and it was, I don't want to overstate that it was, I mean, there was a lot of walking. There was a lot of just, I'm going to keep moving so that I stay warm and keep moving. Cause the minute I stop, I'll probably want to bail on this whole thing. But yeah, I did it and started at 7 p.m. and I threw in the towel a little after 3 a.m. The hardcore people went the full 12 hours.
That boggles my mind.
Yeah. And I think I want to do it again.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I think I do. I found the community. I know that's a big buzzword now.
Oh, people love community.
Yeah. The community around it was perfect for my temperament, which is to say not too in my face, but welcoming and inviting. And it didn't feel like a super macho athletic, we're here to break this record, or, you know, you're not at the level we're at, you're going to start a different time. Like, it was, people were, most impressive of all, there were some dogs that ran like 6 hours with their owners.
Oh my gosh.
And I asked one of the owners, I said, he had like a lab or something. I said, do you have to feed a dog after running 4 hours straight? And he's like, I gave it a quesadilla. And I'm like, okay.
Hell yeah.
So
that's a happy dog.
That apparently is a happy dog. Yeah, that was my weekend.
My gosh.
Yeah.
I cannot fathom. What was the number? What was the final total?
I did 13 laps of this course, which ended up being just over 30 miles.
I cannot fathom that number.
And for anyone out there who thinks that I'm, you know, been training or do like half marathons or marathons, I had run a half marathon a decade ago, but the furthest I had run before this thing was like 7.5 miles.
Wow. That's still an incredible number.
I was telling you before we start recording, and then we can start talking about music and other stuff, but like, it running on dirt is far less impactful than running on your average sidewalk, I think. And the fact that this was out in the woods meant there were many stretches where you were just kind of brisk walking. Mm. And towards the end, that's pretty much all I did was walk.
You know, I do all of my running on an elliptical indoors, listening to podcasts. Mm-hmm. So
To bring it back to music, that was the other funny thing is, you know, we were talking about how before we were recording, how I was saying it was one of the few activities I've done where I tuned out all of the life stresses, work, family, parenting, all the stuff that keeps you up at night. I was just a robot. I was a machine. And at like midnight, I thought, I wonder if I would benefit from listening to a podcast or music. Oh. And nothing. I didn't want anything.
Yeah, you just wanted just you and the wind.
There was like a little meadow I walked through where I was feverishly, while I had my phone out of my pocket, trying to find something that would fit the bill. And ultimately, I'm like, I don't need any of this now.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Yeah. Anyways.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so that was the end of April for me. And I'm trying to think of the rest of April. This is supposed to be our April guitar news recap.
Well, you know, I hear a lot of things happen. I'm not so up on them myself, what with life, but I mean, NAMM happened.
NAMM happened. Yeah, NAMM happened right smack dab in the middle of April. And I was glad to hand some of the editorial baton off to our friend Jason Mays.
Jason Mays.
At Working Class Music, who had never been to a Winter NAMM. Not that this was as big as the old Winter NAMMs of lore, but
yeah,
he was very excited. I was very excited to have a different perspective than the one, you know, this was probably my 20th NAMM, and I've
oh my gosh, yeah.
And I tend to talk to the same dozen people and brands. And so it was kind of fun to just be like, go do your thing. You got a Fretboard Journal badge. recap, and that recap is on our website right now.
Really,
and our paths, we were two ships in the night. We never actually met while in Anaheim, but that's okay. It's NAMM. You end up running off to go do things. So folks should go check out what he wrote, and we're really glad to have Jason.
Jason's the best.
Contributing.
He's a wonderful guy, great person, great player.
Yep.
Keys into just the coolest stuff ever. And he's from a YouTube channel called Working Class Music that they do gear reviews, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic. Please go check them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was good. I'm trying to think of what at NAMM. So it feels like it was like 5 years ago. This was only like
three weeks
ago. So a couple of things that I observed, and I'm going to leave out a million things. So there was the Martin guitar, the Street Legend D18 that had the...
Are those the ones that wear. Are pre-aged?
Yeah. But that was... I think everybody's reaction to that was sort of this like knee-jerk, relicking shouldn't happen.
Oh, it's so boring, but conversation online.
But the trippiest thing about that guitar is that wasn't worn in. That was the finish. Like the easiest way to think about it is like, think of the most high-def laser printer spraying your guitar's finish.
Oh.
And so that guitar was perfectly smooth, and it was modeled after the Kurt Cobain Martin that's in the museum that Mary Lou Lord gifted or gave to original owner, then went to Kurt Cobain.
Yeah.
But that to me was, you know, the relicking thing, it's like, that's so old, I don't even want to discuss it. It speaks to your don't, but it was at NAMM at the booth. I'm sitting there, you know, looking at all the guitars with Fred Green from Martin, and I watched as probably 20 people went up to touch. Because it's like an optical illusion. You want to touch it. It was probably a COVID super spreader guitar, if any of them were. Because everybody was rubbing it. But it was just like a new D18. Like perfectly tiniest finish. And I think more than anything, I was like, okay, whether or not you like relicking guitars, I don't even care. Like, that's not even the point. The point is, this technology exists where... if they want to spray a sunburst, if they want to spray you smiling on the face of your guitar, they could, and it would be just as thin and great as a regular D18's finish.
Now, like, hold the phone. You're saying that Martin guitar can take my smiling visage and print it onto a spruce top?
I think that technology is there. I don't know if they have gone to Office Depot and put in all the inks for your face.
I mean, if Dairy Queen can put it on a cake, like, surely Martin, certainly CF Martin and Co.
Yeah.
Can make this happen.
Yeah. That was the craziest thing. And I feel like that was kind of lost on most of, you know, because literally this guitar got posted to every guitar forum, and everybody, of course, has their opinion on Facebook and everywhere else about relicking and why is Martin
doing
this?
You gotta earn your scars, Jason.
There was that. Ugh. And you know,
who cares?
Every comment, it was a very talked about guitar. It was literally the most touched guitar I saw in my day at NAMM.
Well, now it has real wear.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was the other thing I asked Fred was like, you know, so if you wear your, and it would just wear like a regular,
that's so weird,
D18, D28, whatever finish. But this is part of the finish. This is not somebody with an old set of keys hitting the guitar.
No one's got a Scotch-Brite pad just going to town.
No one is doing any of that.
That is so interesting to me. The technology behind it, I would like to know more about.
Yeah.
I don't remember reading anything about that on the splash page. Because
I know.
I saw that guitar and I went, oh, okay, we're doing this to acoustics now. Like, I don't know if I've encountered a worn acoustic before, like in that sense.
It's
but I don't
done.
Remember reading anything about this printing thing.
Yeah.
That's utterly fascinating.
Yeah.
Because you can do anything at that point. If you're able to print lacquer.
Oh, you could print the craziest sunburst, whatever. I mean, yeah, whatever you want. Whatever your heart
country
desires.
Artists getting guitars with the entire constitution on the front of their guitar.
Well, yeah, that could happen too, I guess. But yeah, that was over at Martin. The other, I'm just thinking about like what went viral from NAMM. The other thing that I think I saw shared more than anything else, and I did not personally stop at the booth, was that Benson Echo Rec
Oh yeah.
Tape Echo thing.
Have you ever messed with an original one?
No.
Oh, they're incredible. They're amazing. Love them. Really interesting that it's T-Rex that did it, right?
Yeah.
Really interesting that they brought back the rotating drum. Like that's endlessly fascinating to me. Although I did peek at the price and it's very big number money here. We're like, it's a few grand. I wonder what the market is for that. I do enough people know about the Echo Rec to get excited about that. I'm certain that studios will probably go for it because studio equipment is always expensive.
Yeah.
It seems tailor-made for that. But like, you would never see me taking one of those on tour. Like, there's no way. I'd be too worried about it. But it's such a cool sound. I know like companies like Line 6 have done like their approximation of it or their like model of it. And it's a wonderful sound no matter how you get it. But really cool to see that back in 2023. I'm just shocked that exists.
Yeah. It is funny how despite the world moving incredibly fast into the world of digital that, you know, when Chase Bliss has the sliders that move like,
or
something spins around, we go back to being a 10-year-old with an Erector set and we all are just like, wow.
Oh no, I love it. I love watching that Chase Bliss pedal. That's incredible to me. I love that.
What else? So our friends at Bourgeois had their 10,000th guitar, which was incredible.
What a milestone.
Yeah. Yamaha unveiled finally, years in the making. We've been covering this on this very podcast, the FG9, which is the high end dreadnought that Andrew Enns has been working on in California. They finally are producing that in Japan, and I think it's on Sweetwater for $4,000. There's a mahogany version and a rosewood version, but it's an incredible guitar. Jake Eddy is an endorsee now thanks to last year's Fretboard Summit, and Jordan Tice was there. And I think if you can get past the headstock, which doesn't say the M word on it, bluegrass people, or the C word, I guess, for Collings, I think bluegrass people would be blown away by the quality of these. Are like high-end, beautiful bluegrass machines.
That's so super exciting.
Yeah, it's fun.
Wow.
So that was going on. And then the thing that I wanted to ask you about was, you know, you are sort of the offset guitar guru. There was one offset at NAMM that is very affordable, and YouTube videos are now floating around of it, but it's the Guild Surfliner. And then I think the Deluxe is the one with the whammy bar.
Yeah, the Guild Surfliner came out a year ago?
Okay.
2 years? I'm struggling to remember when the first model came out.
Yep.
It was called the Surfliner, and the first thought that I had was that they called it a Surfliner. Surf is in the name specifically, but it didn't have a vibrato. It was a hardtail.
Yep.
Which was really surprising to me. Everything else about it seemed cool and appealing.
It's an Amtrak line, for folks who don't know.
Oh, I didn't know
that. It is the line that goes through Santa Barbara, Ventura, down to... I think it cuts away from the sea around Los Angeles, Malibu, but it's the Surfliner you can take from San Francisco down to San Diego.
Well, I didn't know that. Thank you for educating me.
Yeah,
now I get it.
Public transportation, not a lot of folks know.
That's okay. So it was a very interesting choice originally to release a hardtail version, string through, really. But now they've updated it with their own version of the Fender offset vibrato.
Yep.
It's got a little G on it. It's got that guild shaped body plate, which I think is really cool. I love seeing that design echoed from the base plates of like bass bridges, the tailpiece, et cetera.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. And I mean, it's an attractive body shape. It's wildly affordable. I can't believe
$600, $700
something
bucks?
Like that. Yeah. Like just an unthinkably low price.
Yeah.
Headstock's cool. Comes in some cool colors, like a Cadillac green and a pink metallic that are really great. It looks really cool. Looks like something I'd really enjoy. So I'm hoping to get my hands on one at some point to have a more informed opinion. But I say the more options, the merrier, especially at that price point. Squire is fast approaching that same price point at this point. So yeah, may as well have some competition.
Did you ever get your hands on the hardtail version?
No, I haven't touched a single one.
Okay.
Because I'm at this point in my life, Jason. I don't know if you're like me, where you realize you cross this age threshold and you're like, there's a whole bunch of stuff that just won't ever work for me.
Sure.
And I accept it. So hardtail guitars, like I don't even bother anymore, mm-hmm. because I know that if I buy one, I'm going to end up selling it because it's just going to sit in my closet. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's like anytime Gibson rolls out a new Les Paul and it's like, we got a stop bar. Cool. Mm-hmm. I'm just never going to use that. But you know, when they throw a Vibrola on something, mm-hmm. then I'm in the conversation. I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm really excited about the Surfliner. I hope it's cool. I hope I get my hands on one soon. But I think it's really great to see some innovation within that line. Especially because, I don't know, it felt like Guild had like a couple of, maybe not rough years, but they've been flying under the radar for a while. I feel like every new thing they put out is released and there's not enough fanfare for it. So it seems like the Surfliner is getting that attention, and I'm thrilled because Guild is a cool brand.
Guild has had quite a journey
quite
in
a
the
journey.
Last 15 years. Mm-hmm. Few owners and few different factories, and yeah.
Yeah, turnover, tumult, but they're back. Hopefully the Surfliner signals a return to form for a classic brand.
Yeah, there are some demo videos of this floating around, and I think Ryan from 60 Cycle Hump did one. I'm curious, Ryan's approach is, you know, from the surf guitarist perspective, and surf is in the title of this guitar, as it is on the
perfect.
Train.
Perfect mate.
But for folks who are coming at the world of offset lust because they love Nels Klein or Thurston Moore or Deep Sea Diver. Like, is this guitar going to be able to capture those sounds, you think?
Am I going to be able to get my Jessica Dobson sounds? I don't know. I don't know, because this model has that humbucker in the bridge. I did see that Ryan from 60 Cycle did a video where he figured out how to add a coil tap, or a coil split rather, so you can get a single coil sound from the bridge. I haven't played that particular version of the Guild pickup. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't, but mm-hmm. you know, it's already got most of the parts I want anyway. The vibrato is the big thing, so you know, it seems like I could just modify it.
Yep.
Put some different pickups in there. Some Mustang pickups would be cool. But yeah, I don't know. If you're looking for that kind of offset guitar with string length behind the bridge that you can get a little weird with, it sounds like it's got it. I don't know. I don't know. I'm speculating. I haven't
Guild,
had one.
Send us one here. We'll have Mike do a video here in our corner.
Guild, send me an email again. Yes. They actually did reach out, but they reached out like the day that we left for Pennsylvania. So we're getting back on that.
Okay. Absent from NAMM were some of the bigger brands.
The big brands: Gibson, Fender. Mm-hmm. Was Taylor there?
Taylor was there in a very small capacity. Oh. They had literally a couch, and then they had they were taking people up to a hotel room where they were showing a couple of forthcoming items.
Well, that makes me sort of uncomfortable.
But then Collings, same situation. They were there to see any dealers who were walking by and say hello, but none of the fanfare and new guitar announcements of former years. Mm. And then we just found out that, I guess this is technically May news, but Gibson has a new CEO.
Yeah.
Who's not really new to Gibson, but
he isn't at all, but he's been there. Yeah.
So, JC Curley, who was the CEO when KKR, I think is the investment firm, bought Gibson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
JC's stepping down, and Cesar Guikian, I think I'm saying that right. I'm a half Armenian, so I better.
I have only ever seen his last name spelled out and have never heard it.
Yeah,
pronounced,
I believe that's it. I've interviewed him on this podcast. Super passionate guitar, you know, electric guitarist, loves hanging out. You know, his Instagram is all about Tool and Metallica. And unlike pretty much any other CEO of a guitar or any company of this size, like he can, mm-hmm. get up on stage with pretty much any band and hold his own, which
that's awesome.
Pretty cool.
Love hearing that.
But he is the new CEO, and I don't know if you have any thoughts on that or.
Well, you know, I mean, Gibson's.
It's a tough company to talk about.
Tough company to talk about. I mean, the Henry J era ended with you know, a lot of the king is dead. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I'm a big fan of 90s Gibson. A lot of my favorite Gibsons are from the 1990s.
Really?
I love that era. My first good guitar was a black Les Paul Standard from 1999. Loved that thing. Okay. Kind of regret selling it, but it was like 10 and a half pounds.
Yep.
You know, I'm getting to an age where I got to be careful. So I did eventually sell that, but I don't know. Every 90s Gibson I come across is just a complete joy. And then, you know, a lot of people will tell you that there was a big dip through the 2000s and into the 2010s. And I would sort of agree with that. You know, speaking as a repair person, yeah, I've seen a lot.
Yeah.
But lately, you know, when they announced this big change in 2019, correct? Was it 2019, 2018?
It was 2018 that they were basically saved from bankruptcy by KKR.
I believe.
Yeah.
So they brought in new people. Cesar was one of them.
Yeah.
And JC was the other. And then my friend Mark Agnesi got brought on too. And mm-hmm. I was really happy about that. I remember that first NAMM when it felt like they were announcing that Gibson was back. And I remember playing all the guitars in the booth. And of course, it's a show. They're going to bring the cream of the crop. But all those guitars felt great to me. And I was enamored with the Trini Lopez reissue.
Yeah.
That was my favorite thing. Although I ended up having a gigantic neck, which means I could never play it. But yeah, I don't know. It felt like, as speaking as a repair person, that things were on an upward curve. And yeah. And I realized that JC specialize in like brand rehabilitation or like getting things?
I know he was at Levi's before. I mean, I think KKR, the owners, hired him to do exactly that.
To right the ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And either the ship is upright now or KKR is trying to sell, or I don't know, like, who knows, right?
Yeah.
It's corporate stuff.
It's corporate stuff that I'm not privy to any of that. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
But it seems like news that was always going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I never got the impression that JC was like the one and done CEO for life type thing. It always felt like Gibson was in a bit of a transition, and just like, I remember they cut factories, sadly, Memphis, which was an amazing place, is no longer there, part of the brand. But I mean, they were cutting things out, they were cutting out the fat, they were trying to improve quality. And so it feels like, yeah, this was naturally going to happen at some point. We were going to have the company handed off.
Yeah.
You know, Cesar is the person that I would have expected.
Of course,
you're right. He's absolutely passionate about guitars and about the players who play them. You know, I can't say that, like, you know, I'm not necessarily like, Tool is great. Tool is fine. I'm not the biggest Tool fan.
Yeah.
Not saying they're bad, just not my thing.
Sure.
You know, and when it comes to Slash models, like, I think we've had plenty at this point.
Sure.
So not to criticize, but my point is that hopefully this, maybe Gibson will open up for some new blood, some new, like,
yeah, new collaborations
yeah. Is what I would like to see in the future. And I don't know, like, everything going on behind the scenes. I know Mark and I have talked about some like really cool things that just haven't happened yet. Mm-hmm. That get me excited. But you know, when I look at the line, I look at the standard Gibson line, and I see a 61 SG reissue with a stop tail, but then there's also the Lyre Vibrola, and then there's the Sideways. Like, there are options there, and that gives me a lot of hope.
Sure.
So yeah, I'm excited to see what happens for Gibson in the future. Yeah, I just like to see some new collaborations. Would be amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's so many great bands out there now that, you know, it seems like Gibson is supporting them.
Yeah.
But I want to see that, you know, come to fruition. I want to see those bands, those artists, not just get guitars provided for festivals. I want to see them create something new.
Yeah.
Or bring back some weirder models from the old Gibson catalog. Give us a Gibson RD with the right scale length. Like, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Time will tell. I don't have like a really passionate stance on it. I just think this is natural and totally expected.
Yeah.
You know, this wasn't the kind of news that made me immediately reach out to my industry contacts and go, is everything okay?
Yeah.
Is Gibson failing? I didn't rush to create my YouTube theme, my YouTube thumbnail of, you know, Gibson, are they back or are they dead? Like, you know,
no
doom and gloom speculation. It's just, it's like, oh yeah. Yeah. That was going to happen.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Riveting, riveting news.
Riveting news.
Speaking of riveting news.
Yeah. You were just saying Gibson should think about some collaborations. Maybe G. Weller?
G. Weller. Doesn't G. Weller play a Gibson?
I think Blake Mills said that he played an L00 or an LO.
Yeah.
So for folks who haven't somehow found this, around the 1st of April, we put out a podcast called The Mystery of G. Weller. It was hosted by our former employee, Ryan Richter, who's an incredible musician.
Incredible musician.
And friend of the magazine based in LA. And he found this record on Spotify. I'm going to screw up the album title, but the artist is G. Weller. Something about the Lower Islands.
Sea and, shanties?
Pirate Songs of the Lower
Pirate Islands. Songs of the Lower Islands.
This album's been out since 2019, and Ryan wanted to dig a little deeper, so he reached out to the label, and then he ended up reaching out to Blake Mills, and then may have talked to G. Weller himself.
Yeah.
And it's been quite a journey, if anybody hasn't taken this up yet. It's only an hour and 20 minutes or whatever long, but more downloads of that podcast and more feedback, good, bad, ugly, all of it, than we've ever gotten over any other episode. And the coolest part of all, though, and is just that my inbox has been filled with like really well-known, incredible guitarists that we all know and love saying like, what's the story with this? How did this record exist? How does it exist? And so that's felt gratifying, even though I know some of you listeners out there were utterly confused or pissed off that we put out a kind of weird, quirky, investigative journalism piece about a goofy album.
I have to say, Jason, with everything going on, I didn't have a chance to listen to this until Monday.
Oh God.
At the gym.
Okay.
May 1st. I was riveted. Riveted. I think Ryan did such an excellent job of putting this whole thing together. You know, there were moments of this that harkened back to the early days of podcasting when I first discovered Radiolab.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is this new format? This is incredible. Yeah, it blew my mind. I was riveted. There were moments that I had to, Monday was chest day, so I had to stop bench pressing to like collect myself because I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Like these interviews were like Ryan was doing a fine job of being a journalist, but the interviews were so weirdly combative that like I was there in the room with Ryan as I'm bench pressing, just being like flabbergasted or like pivoting. You know, being taken down a peg or two, just like rolling with the punches and really just having the time of my life. I thought this was an excellent piece. And so good that it didn't matter that I haven't heard the music yet. I haven't dug into it yet.
Yeah.
Like I just got hooked by the story, which was so expertly told. The interview with Blake Mills, it was so good to hear his thoughts and his experience out of nowhere, too. Calling the bait and tackle shop. Man, it's a wild ride, and I'm so glad that it's a viral hit.
Oh, by our standards, it is. It's actually just fun to daydream about, like, wow, maybe there are a whole bunch of really great albums. I mean, no, there must be floating around where we... But it's what was rare about this one and remains rare about it is like there's literally no paper trail. There's no internet presence for this artist at all. And so that
But everything is legal. Everything is legal.
yeah. So if anybody hasn't checked that out yet, please go do. What else do we have?
Just some of the finest podcasting I have ever heard in my life. I
can't say I had much to do with it aside from putting it out. It was all Ryan. So
Ryan, well done, Ryan. Like, yeah, my God.
And I will say, and maybe this is a segue, Ryan is going to be at our Fretboard Summit in Chicago, August 24th. Fretboardsummit.org, everybody. Along with a whole bunch of other people. We can go into that if we want. But Ryan is proposing that we have a little G. Weller recital where people who want to get up on stage and try to play one of these impossibly weird, confusing tunes can go up. And on Instagram, we've already shared at least 5 or 6 really good arrangements, including your friend.
Our mutual friend, Trevor Barnes.
Yeah.
Who is an incredible musician in his own right.
Yeah.
Like, and he's doing it on mandolin, and it's excellent.
He was the first mandolin player to do it. Which was admirable, really cool. So if you're not following us on Instagram, do it, because then we at least share weird stuff all the time.
Click that follow button.
Fretboard Summit, like I said, August 24th to 26th. Hopefully you will be there. I do have you down for doing something, so you better show
me up. Personally, you, the collective, no, to the listener.
You, Mike Adams.
No, I'm definitely coming.
Okay.
I'm coming.
I mean, we have a whole array of updates, and I don't want to bore anyone to tears, but because we just did a podcast on all the updates. But as of yesterday, our friends at Callings Guitars are bringing Joey Landreth to this thing.
Oh my God.
So we got Joey Landreth coming. He's going to play and potentially do a workshop. And also, I think, be one of the judges at the Josh Scott Helms.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Germanium chef. We've tossed around so many blank chef ideas. We started out with phosphor bronze chef last year, and then we pivoted to nickel wound chef when it was an electric guitar build off.
Uh-huh.
When we're doing these Iron Chef spoof things.
It's great.
But this year it's a pedal build off. It's Robert Keeley against Heather Brown.
Ooh.
And they're going to build some sort of germanium fuzz in an hour.
Oh my God.
Cheating allowed, as always. And Josh Scott is doing everything. He's the Alton Brown, I guess, this year. And then, yeah, we're going to have Joey Landreth there. I'm not sure who the other judges are, but I'm sure they'll be incredible because the amount of great musicians attending this thing is insane.
Yeah.
So that's going to be fun. You can register at fretboardsummit.org while you can. What else do we have here on my little list? You're staring at my new gadget that just arrived yesterday.
So, dear reader, in front of me, there is a little booklet that says Tone Traveler on it, which I erroneously believed was the inner workings of a CD. Just like,
no, it's a CD booklet size.
It's the exact same size. But instead of lyrics or fun pictures of the band, there's a lot of words here about what I assume is one of these like electronic devices that break in guitars. Is that what
acoustic
it's doing?
Acoustic guitars, yeah. Or any acoustic instrument, actually. So this is, I think for a decade plus, there's been something called the Tone Right, which
that's what
mounted
I was trying to
on
think
your
of.
Strings. And I think fairly early on, someone identified it as possibly being like apart from a fish tank. Like it was, people figured out that you could make a crude version out of stuff that you would buy at a Petco or something. But this device, a bunch of musicians and luthiers that I really respect and trust have been swearing by this thing. And it's sort of, you put your guitar on a wall or in a stand, your acoustic guitar, and you kind of slide this between the strings and it just sort of sits right above the bridge. And you turn it on. And the craziest thing is, this device that is right next to you, Mike, that looks like a Kindle. No, right. Look at me. This thing. That comes with it. That is.
Wait, I thought this was a mini iPad. No. What the heck?
This. It comes with its own iPad, basically, that is not usable for anything iPad. It just comes with the Tone Traveler by this. The official title of this device is Tone Traveler by Dr. Herringbone. And with this fake iPad, you can actually decide what chord or frequency or anything you want this little speaker on your guitar to emit. You can even pinpoint certain strings if certain strings need to be broken. This is all foreign to me. We by the time we do our next installment of this thing that we're doing,
yeah,
we'll have some updates on this, but I'm really curious to play with it because...
Jason, how much does this cost? Because it comes with an iPad and there's a camera. Like,
no, the camera doesn't do anything.
What?
I don't think. I think you can just buy maybe on Alibaba like iPad shells and that's what this is.
What?
I don't know. I don't want to speak out of turn to this device that many musicians have said is actually works. And I guess it's no different than the age old thing of like putting a loudspeaker in front of your acoustic guitar and letting it blast for days.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I understand how sound waves pointed directly at a thing can, can affect it. The technological side of this is surprising.
The iPad thing is kind of, I kind of was like, wait, what? I believe this is in the $400 range, and it does work on, you can work it, do it on a stringed instruments like violin. You can do it on a mandolin.
Yeah. Cello, calls out.
Yeah. And we'll play with it. There are a few guitars around here that are amazing guitars that just don't get played. And so I want to pull one of those out. One of the things I did notice was with the volume on full, you do kind of get this droney sound that's not that loud, but it's irritating enough to where you wouldn't want to work right next to the guitar for the next 8 hours. So I'm going to do this over the weekend.
Yeah. Okay. How are you going to, are you going to do a before and after recording?
Well, I don't even know. I don't know how we would capture it.
Oh, let's not get too scientific, but you got these two mics here.
Yeah.
May as well just strum a chord.
Yeah. Yeah.
And since you're coming in after the weekend,
yeah,
leave it in the same place.
Oh yeah.
Put a little piece of tape on the table and let you know where your sound hole was.
Yeah. Yep. All right.
See what happens. I would be interested to hear.
I might have to bring you back for this, but yeah, we can do this. What else do we have update wise? Rest in peace, Gordon Lightfoot.
Yeah. 84
years old.
Yeah. What a loss.
Huge loss. I went down the Gordon Lightfoot rabbit hole when he, like everybody does. It's like, oh, I should re-listen to this music.
And yeah,
it's that voice. Like, there's no other voice like Gordon Lightfoot's. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, Mike,
Jason,
thank you for coming back.
Thank you
To our very loud office. I think the construction workers are on a lunch break because it got eerily quiet all of a sudden.
It's very quiet. I actually wish the noise would start up again because now I really don't know what's going on over there.
The bodies have been buried. They've jackknifed through the cement and now
they've given someone a cask of Amontillado. They're sealing up the wall around them.
Yes. So those are our updates, everybody. We will have more. Obviously, if anyone has guitar news they want to share or they want to hear Mike's opinion on anything,
hit
us up at podcast@fretboardjournal.com. Hopefully, we'll see some of you at this Fretboard Summit taking place in Chicago in August. Mm-hmm. And Mike, I can guarantee you May is going to go better.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Than April and March did.
I mean, look, what... Last night, I got to see Return of the Jedi in the theater. I don't know if I've ever seen it in the theater, so already things are looking
okay. Good.
Yeah.
On that note, we'll call it a podcast, and thanks again for coming.
Thank you.